Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. This week, your hosts are from the North Coast Environmental Center with Executive Director Larry Glass and Admin and Development Director Bella Waters. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Today, we'll be providing brief snippets of current news that pertain to various environmental topics, such as Humboldt County Planning Commission Chair question for conflict of interest, abalone season on hold till 2021, Dakota Access Pipeline, Sierra Club infiltrated, 10 facts you probably missed in the government's climate report, and current climate change news. So, Larry, what story do you have for us first?
Well, I think the most controversial story that we have right now in our area is the plan to rezone 500,000 acres from the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, and the investigative reporting by Ryan Burns of the Lost Coast Outpost pretty much following up on accusations leveled by our newly elected supervisor, Steve Madrone, that there was some serious conflict of interest going on here. And as Ryan Burns exposed in the story, the chair of the Planning Commission and the person that I, in my public comments, pointed out as having made the whole process that much more confusing for the public. And now you begin to see that it was probably intentional that this is all very confusing and kind of a big shell game, is because this gentleman, Robert Morris, according to the story in the Outpost, has properties that are affected by his decisions on the Planning Commission, which he shouldn't be doing. He should be recusing himself and not even taking part in the discussions, not even being in the room. He needs to leave the room when these discussions take place, but yet he is running the meetings and sort of steering them off the cliff, in my opinion. So anyways, I would say that's the big news. While they never reached a firm decision, they sort of kicked the can down the road until January. The public needs to stay on these guys, and part of their tactic is to wear the public down. So we have these numerous public meetings. The public shows up big numbers and testifies at great personal expense a lot of times to individuals, because they have to give up work or they have to arrange childcare or one thing or another that they have to do to get to these meetings and spend the entire day sometimes at these meetings or an entire evening. And then they just continue it. It's like, oh yeah, well, we'll have another meeting, you know, like, so they're wearing the public down. So members of the public that are concerned about this, I encourage you to stay vigilant. Keep going to these meetings, as horrible as they are to sit through. Your presence definitely has an effect, because otherwise this would have just jammed right through.
Right.
And in this particular case, it did not. So that's our biggest story. And then we've got some interesting news here, as EPIC, Environmental Protection Information Center, and the Western Environmental Law Center notified the government that they are planning to take legal action to challenge their program of killing beavers in California. They're claiming that it harms endangered salmon. A lot of people, especially in Northern California, this has always sort of blown my mind, but your sort of old school farmer type people in California have always cursed beavers, like they hate beavers. And then there's supposedly they carry some disease called beaver fever. I mean, it's all sort of this big mythology that they've built up around this very important mammal in the whole ecosystem. I can speak to Trinity County, which I'm pretty familiar with, Hay Fork Valley, which is now pretty dry. And at one time, Hay Fork Creek had lots of beaver dams in it. Those beaver dams helped to seed the aquifer, you know, under Hay Fork, which is not very deep. You know, there's a rock strata under the valley there, and so there's not a whole lot of depth to the floor there for the aquifer to exist in, but the beavers helped replenish the aquifer by these mini dams that they would make in Hay Fork Creek. Without those dams, because they were kicked out of there by the ranchers and farmers in Hay Fork Valley a long time ago, Hayfork Valley is a much more arid and dry place with very low water production for any wells or whatnot around there. So that's one important function that beavers play. And they, of course, are really important for small fish, fingerlings, little fish. You know, they use those dams as, you know, little rookeries to hang out in. In fact, the Yurok tribe has been recently dropping whole trees, roots and all, into the South Fork and the Trinity to try and establish these little ponding situations where the fingerlings can have a cool place to hang out of the hot summer sun and the shallow water that would exist in the summer months. Well, it's the same story with the beaver dams.
Right.
So hats off to EPIC and Western Environmental Law Clinic for going after the feds over this one. And then, I guess this shouldn't be surprising, but it's sad anyway. California abalone season has been pretty much suspended until 2021. The stressed population is continuing to decline. And for those of us that have lived on the North Coast for a long time that can remember the 60s and 70s, abalone was very plentiful around here. And that's not the case anymore. It's difficult. I have had friends that love to go scuba diving or just snorkeling looking for abalone, and you just don't see it anymore. And you have to get into some pretty rough waters if you do ever find any. So they have suspended the season, and hopefully the abalone will begin to bounce back. But this is just another sign that, you know, if you don't regulate the take of these things, then they just get overfished, overhunted, and then there aren't any.
Right.
So an issue that the NEC got particularly involved in, along with all the folks that live in Trinidad, was, of course, the proposed 6-story hotel that was going to be placed at the Trinidad Rancheria, also known as Cherie Heights. This one got a lot of public attention, got a lot of comment. We put it on the cover of the last Eco News, got a lot of reaction to that. So all the public comments during that scoping session went to the BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, who was the lead agency in this particular environmental process called NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. So under NEPA, they had to get public comment. So hundreds of the public made comments along with the NEC, and we've been waiting and waiting. They had a very short timeline that you had to make your comments in, but like most federal agencies, they give the public this narrow little window, and then they take as long as they want to ever respond. So we haven't ever gotten an official response back from the BIA. But it appears that the tribe, who is the one promoting the hotel, has begun to try and slightly retreat. And I say slightly because they lopped a floor off.
Right.
So
yes.
Instead of 6 stories, now it's 5 stories. And I think they took away whatever facility was going to be on the rooftop. So a slight reduction in the size, but my understanding is it will still be the same amount of rooms.
That's what I've heard.
So the same amount of rooms. So the impact really doesn't change much. The only change that would represent was maybe a little less intrusive visually, but then they're also saying they're going to redesign the building. So I guess we'll have to watch and see what is the design that they come forward with. Now, a number of members of the community encouraged them to redesign the building and said that they could probably accept a different design, one that was more fitting. A lot of people at the public meeting that I attended talked about the Awani Lodge in Yosemite as saying an example of something that style would fit better in the location than a big glass and plaster sort of concept that they did have. But there's still lots of questions. The wastewater situation, the use of water from the Trinidad Municipal Water System, those have yet to be answered. So once again, we're back in a holding pattern, having to remain vigilant. we will be sure and communicate with all of you out there if this rears its potentially ugly head again.
Yep.
In other local news, Trinity County continuing saga with cannabis cultivation continues. As I've pointed out in the past, Humboldt County at least did an EIR, even if it wasn't the best one. And of course, our friends at Friends of the Eel challenged it, and that's still in negotiation. But at least they did some environmental work and had something to guide them in their decision making, whereas Trinity County has refused to do anything. And they're just continuing to issue permits. And now at their most recent planning commission meeting, they allowed for 15 one-acre grow sites in Trinity County. So all of this without any sort of environmental documentation to support these decisions. No one's looked at how much water is already being taken. In Trinity County, the Board of Supervisors don't want to look at the illegal growing that's going on there, which is Trinity County's the worst illegal growing situation in the state of California per capita. There's only 13,000 people live in Trinity County. There was 5,000 illegal grows identified at 3,900 on private land and over 1,000 on public land last time anybody did a count. So you can see the scope of the problem there. And the environmental impacts have been extensive. Lots of illegal grading. And once again, Trinity County, at the last Board of Supervisors meeting, there was an attempt to get a moratorium on grading in Trinity County. Now, Humboldt County has a grading ordinance. Trinity County has no grading ordinance. So that means you can just fire up your little bobcat and just destroy at will in Trinity County. And only if CDFW catches you are you in any trouble. But there's no ordinance on grading. And there was an attempt at a moratorium, and they turned it down. So anyways, the state of California, in their infinite wisdom, and I'm being extremely sarcastic, has given counties extra time to comply with CEQA. They wouldn't do that for any other issue I've ever heard of, but they've done it for this one. So all these counties have till 2019 in July, so next year in July, to have their CEQA documentation completed. Trinity County has hardly even started, and it usually takes over a year to get something like this done. So anyway, SAFE has now retained an attorney to represent us, so I'll be reporting on that as that develops, but I believe that we will wind up having to go to court to stop Trinity County from doing any more harm than they've already done.
And what is SAFE?
SAFE is Safe Alternatives for Our Forest Environment, which is the group I represent at the North Coast Environmental Center. It's the Trinity County's oldest environmental group. We started in the early 70s. So we have some interesting news on a more national front here. It turns out that a Republican activist with ties to the infamous Project Veritas, that's the organization that was setting up these sort of phony conflicts and then videotaping them and trying to get them to go viral on the internet to try and damage Democratic candidates. Well, anyway, somebody tied with that apparently attempted somewhat successfully to infiltrate the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club, one of the nation's oldest and most prominent environmental groups, was infiltrated earlier this year by a right-wing activist with alleged connections to Project Veritas, a conservative undercover video production company that has faced multiple lawsuits and criminal charges. Southern California conservative activist Ernie White, using the alias Earl White, began volunteering at the office of the Los Angeles chapter of the Sierra Club in April in an attempt to undermine the organization's work, according to the environmental group. By volunteering with the Sierra Club through an alias, White was hoping to use the environmental group's name in order to gain access to federal campaigns during the midterm election cycle. So you always have to remain vigilant. So
yes.
Far, nobody's tried to infiltrate the NEC yet. But we're ready.
Yeah, we're picky. Yep. All right, next up, energy transfer. Banks lost billions by ignoring early Dakota Access Pipeline concerns. Roughly 4 years ago, Energy Transfer Partners, ETP, filed a federal application to build a 1,172-mile oil pipeline from North Dakota's Bakken Shale across the U.S. to Illinois at a projected cost of $3.8 billion. Before that application was filed on September 30, 2014, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe met with ETP to express concerns about the Dakota Access Pipeline and fears of water contamination. Though the company, now known as Energy Transfer, had rerouted a river crossing to protect the state capital Bismarck against oil spills, it apparently turned a deaf ear to the tribe's objections. Following that approach proved to be a very costly decision, a new analysis concludes, with ETP, banks, and investors taking billions in losses as a result. This case study eliminates that the costs incurred not less than $7.5 billion, but could be higher depending on the terms of confidential contracts, a new report concludes, nearly double the initial project cost. The banks that financed DAPL incurred an additional $4.4 billion in costs in the form of account closures, not including costs related to reputational damage. In addition, the company's poor social risk management caused taxpayers and other local stakeholders to incur at least $38 million in costs, the report concludes.
Wow, that's one expensive pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they expect to make all that back plus more as they're pumping all that tar sands oil through there.
Right.
All right, well, now we get to the part of the program that a lot of people really have come to comment on and appreciate, the sort of climate change roundup that we do once a month on here. And there's a stack of stories for us to choose from every month. There's so many stories. The alternative media in particular is really good about grabbing a hold of these stories. So first one is really interesting one. The U.S. military needed new icebreakers years ago, but they have not invested in icebreakers. So now the melting Arctic is raising national security stakes because they put off building any new icebreakers. We have like four now. And Russia has built a fleet of more than 40 of them. So they're going to be dominating the Arctic now as it breaks up. And you're saying, well, the Arctic is melting. Why do you need icebreakers? Well, you still need it because even though the Arctic is melting, there's still big chunks of ice floating around out there. And every once in a while on a cold day, it freezes up and you still need an icebreaker to get through that. So anyways, the U.S. Coast Guard says they need at least six new icebreakers at a minimum. But chances of them getting that from this current administration,
right,
probably slim and none, since this current administration completely denies there's any kind of change going on at all. Environmental cleanups and their return on investment. Apparently, they return big time on the investment. The study that's cited in this newspaper story is focused on the Boston Harbor area. It shows that while the cleanup cost $5 billion to perform, which is not small change, it netted $30 to $100 billion in environmental costs. So well worth the effort. The Boston Harbor cleanup led to significant increase in private investment and economic growth along the waterfront that has outpaced the city's overall rate of increase, says Dr. Dai Jin, the lead author of a study from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, USA. This shows we need to give more consideration to ecosystem service benefits when evaluating policy options. Something the NEC has been saying for about 45 years.
Right.
Global carbon emissions reached a new record high in 2018. So despite all the kumbaya sort of feelings with the Paris Climate Accords, it hasn't slowed down the carbon-producing nations of the world, particularly China and India, from just spewing forth carbon at unprecedented rates. So we're continuing to lose that battle, and with dire consequences, I'm afraid, to come. Decades of denial and stalling have created a climate crunch, a 1965 speech to members, American Petroleum Institute President Frank Icard outlined the findings of a report by then-President Lyndon Johnson's Science Advisory Committee, based in part on research conducted in the 1950s. The substance of the report was, this was in 1950,
yeah.
There's still time to save the world's people from catastrophic consequences of pollution, but time is running out. Yeah, so they called this a long time ago, but nobody was listening then either. How much is climate change costing the U.S.? Warming could exact a major economic toll, but reducing emissions and adapting to changes can alleviate some of those costs. Climate change comes with a hefty bill. The United States stands to experience major economic losses over the 21st century as sea level rises, the heat waves become more frequent, and rains fall in heavier bursts, according to a recently released national climate assessment. Sources of the costs range from damage and abandoned coastal properties to wages lost when it's too hot to work to premature deaths caused by increased air pollution and disease exposure. The report was put together by 13 federal agencies. So, very, very grim. And more grim world news. Scientists warn that Brazil's new Trump-like president that they just elected, he was elected on a campaign promise to log the Amazon forest and open them up to cattle grazing.
Wow.
And oil exploration and just general ranching. So Brazil contains about 60% of the Amazon rainforest. So this has climate scientists really concerned. The Amazon takes in as much as 2 billion tons of carbon dioxide every year and releases 20% of the world's oxygen. So very concerning, this wave of Trumpism all around the world. And here's a guy in Brazil that was elected as Jair Bolsonaro. Warning for seafood lovers, climate change could crash important fisheries. Off of Iceland and Norway, the world's largest populations of Atlantic cod have kept fishing boats thriving for centuries. They're featured in Viking legends and grace today's Icelandic coins. But because of the warming temperatures in the ocean, this fishery is now in danger of collapse. Well, by now you've heard us mention the National Climate Report issued by the government, and it's a huge report, thousands of pages long, really too technical and too long for most folks to really jump in and comprehend it all. But here's 10 facts that we've pulled out of that we'd like to relate to you. And these are impacts that will affect our lives. Firefighting will wind up costing billions more. At the front of many people's minds in California this year was the wildfires, and last year and the year before. Well, it's only going to get worse. And they're saying that the amount of fires and the acreage burn could triple in this 100-year cycle. So that's staggering. I don't know where we'd come up with the money and the resources to carry that off. Allergies will increase. Higher temperatures will mean longer growing seasons in some areas, and with this comes longer pollen and allergy season. In fact, the average length of growing season has increased by 2 weeks since the start of the 20th century, has become slightly longer in the West than the East. Ragweed, for example, responds to higher concentrations of carbon dioxide in the air by producing higher quantities of allergenic pollen. A lot of people are allergic to ragweed.
Yep.
Playgrounds will get hotter. The science is clear that children are incredibly vulnerable to the impacts of climate change, and part of the danger stems from their playgrounds. Children are particularly susceptible to high heat and can be exposed during their daily activities, especially south of here where almost all the playgrounds are blacktop. Yeah, so very dangerous. Dairy cows will feel the heat, cutting down production of milk. And then we've got public and private property will begin to be taken over by water as the sea level rises. The report states that homes in Atlantic City, New Jersey, Norfolk, Virginia will be unsellable due to recurring flooding. The study doesn't even focus in on the North Coast, but here we have the land subsiding anyway, sinking already, and then with the sea level rising and storm surges, we're going to be seeing the effects here in the next 10, 20 years. Transportation will get worse. Water from sea and from the air will disrupt our transport networks. In the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, intense precipitation will cause air travel to be delayed. Cargo shipments by rail and truck will be impacted too. In Hawaii and the Pacific Islands, more intense tropical storms will interrupt shipments in certain areas, will be affected by lack of precipitation. So the effects are not uniform globally. Some places will see no rain. Some places will see too much, but it'll be much more extreme, is basically what they're saying in summary. Mega droughts will last longer in the Southwest. The water cycle has already been altered by climate change, the report states. This includes changes to the snowpack, which come spring is a vital resource when it starts to melt. With warmer temperatures, the snow may fall as rain instead, which is useful for the moment, but it doesn't last. No. It just runs off. And the snowpack is far below normal during the last 5 years or so. It's a 10 to 20% reduction in soil moisture. Dry periods will be lasting more than 10 years. Tropical fisheries will begin to decline. And that's where a good portion of the world feeds itself, tropical fisheries. Hospitals will be hit by storm surges, and they cite examples of what's happened in Florida and South Carolina, where the hospitals were disrupted and had to be evacuated. So it's pretty tough when you're evacuating hospitals.
Right.
You know, where do you take those people? So, and then number 10, agricultural regions in the world will need more weather stations. So the first thing that the Trump administration did when they took office was to cut the Department of Commerce's budget, which is NOAA is under the Department of Commerce. So NOAA's already seen cutbacks. They're going to see more cutbacks at a time when there's more weather data needed. For farmers to plan accurately, there needs to be localized, very localized, weather reports. And you can only get accurate weather reports from having accurate monitoring stations throughout these areas. So that's what the report calls for. Very grim. Sorry to end the year on such a grim note, but folks, that's the reality.
Well, thank you, Larry, on that. This has been the Eco News Report with Bella Waters and Larry Glass, and we've been your hosts for the past half hour. You can find more information about the issues we've discussed on the NEC website, www.yournec.org. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. Previous shows are posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again for the next Eco News Report.